This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Time now is 9 minutes past the hour, 11 o'clock. Still keeping a close watch on proceedings in the National Assembly this morning out in Cape Town. That's where our reporter, as you heard a short while ago, Nkosinathi Shazi, he is also in Parliament keeping a close watch on proceedings there. And today, we also focus on critical topics as we continue observing what's happening in the National Assembly. And this time, looking at the critical topic of women and youth representation in South Africa's 7th Democratic Parliament. Just looking at the PA's Gayton McKenzie, a short while ago, also tweeting, taking a picture with two young people who I believe are from his party, saying that, look, we are changing the way things have been done. We don't want an old and rusty parliament. We are bringing fresh blood into this. And especially youth and women representation is what they are pushing for, it would appear, when it comes to their lists. And the new National Assembly set to feature a broader spectrum of age groups, including the youngest MP in our democratic history. However, female representation has seen a slight decline, if you will, as we look ahead to this potential formation of a government of national unity. We also explore the importance of diversity and inclusion in our democratic processes. Joining us to discuss this issue is Professor Cheryl Hendricks, who's the Executive Director, this at the Institute for Justice and Reconciliation, and a lecturer at Wits Business School. Professor Hendricks also brings a wealth of knowledge on governance, justice, and the role of diverse representation in really shaping a more inclusive society. Welcome to the program, Professor Hendricks.
Thank you. Good to be here with you this morning.
So firstly, how do you view the evolution of youth representation in South Africa's parliament, particularly in the introduction of the youngest MP in our history? What impact do you believe this will have?
I think it's very good to see more youth going to parliament. I think there are 79, if I'm not mistaken, under the age of 40 MPs this time round, which is the first for South Africa, and I think that is great. Our constitution, firstly, says no discrimination, and that is also no discrimination against age. And so the world over, we see a more youthful parliaments, presidents, etc. And so this is a positive trend for South Africa.
So the representation of women in the 7th Parliament has also slightly decreased if you look at the numbers. What are the implications of this decline for gender equality and policy making in South Africa?
I think this is a sad point for us. We are now 30 years into our democracy. Gender equality has been a strong element of our democratization process, but we have seen a backsliding on this since about 2010, and this is now evidenced also in our representation in Parliament. We are shifting from having one of the highest representation of women in Parliament, at least for SADC, but also I think like 12th globally, and this we declining in now. So this is a negative trend, and it will impact us. As we always say, firstly, it is our right to be included. We need a rights-based argument for this, and not just an instrumental. We have to defend why we have to be there. We have to be there because we are 52% of the population, 55% of the electorate, and because our interests should be reflected. And for that to be reflected, we need to be meaningfully represented.
We are in discussion with Professor Cheryl Hendricks, of course, exploring this very important topic on women and youth representation in South Africa's 7th Democratic Parliament. We will continue our discussion in a short while.
9 a.m. to noon. This is Power Talk on Power 98.7.
Indeed, this is a Power Talk. Looking at the National Assembly, more members of Parliament being sworn in. I do see, Carl Niehaus, he's about to take his oath, of course, forming part of the ANC, not the ANC, but the EFF list of MPs who are being sworn in right now. That group currently taking their oath of office as they begin to prepare their work as well. Zwanele Manyi, I also see a notable figure, as well as Fana Mokoena, I believe he's also being sworn in right now as part of those grouping of MPs on the part of the EFF. We continue our discussion with Professor Cheryl Hendricks, looking at this critical topic of women and youth representation in South Africa's 7th Democratic Parliament. Professor Hendricks, as we continue exploring this theme, diversity in terms of ethnicity, language and religion, it's often seen as a source of economic and political stability in developing countries. Why do you think this is? And how can South Africa turn this diversity into a strength?
I think that, you know, our challenges in society are diverse. Our makeup of society is diverse. And if you want peace and stability and prosperity for all, then your governing structure should reflect the diversity that you have in society. Political scientists, sociologists have all shown that that creates more stable governance for us.
Yeah, yeah. And in the context of forming a government of national unity, as what is being proposed, for instance, by the ANC, why is it crucial to ensure that different voices and demographics are adequately represented?
As I indicated, you know, we can't assume that the challenges that we have in our society can only be responded to by bad males who assume almost a natural right for governance. Nobody asks them why they are there representing everybody else. But more to the point, if we're looking at issues such, let's just take unemployment, for example. We speak about it broadly, but who are the people who are unemployed? They are youth, they are women. Only 52% of women of working age, for example, are employed. That means 48% of women of working age are not employed, for example. And I'm sure the statistics will be very similar, if not more, for young people. And so they must have a voice in deciding what the programs, the policies, the frameworks are going to be around trying to solve issues of poverty and unemployment. We like to use the saying, nothing for us without us, when we speak about gender issues. The same should apply for youth, for gender non-conforming persons, for the disabled, for particular ethnic groups, etc. That should be a principled decision, I think.
So countries like Rwanda, Morocco, Kenya, and even Uganda have reserved seats for youth representatives to balance this representation that they wish to see. What lessons can South Africa then learn from these examples that I've just raised?
You know, we have also said for women, a quota system should be there. We see the decrease because it's only the ANC that actually had a quota system for representation of women. So the lower number, the fewer number of representatives that they send to parliament, the fewer number of women we see in parliament, because the other political parties don't have that. It has been proven globally that it is a quota system that gets youth, that would get women or any other group that you want represented into parliament. You can't just leave it open. If you want them to be there, you need to make affirmative provisions for that.
So a recent Afrobarometer survey shows that while most citizens support equal chances for women in politics, many believe that women will face criticism, like some argue, or even harassment. What drives this perception and how can it be changed?
It's stereotypes. We face those barriers. 30 years into our democracy, we still ask, why is it that we have so few women leading political parties, for example, and those who do lead political parties, those are not parties that we we vote for. Because we have a particular image still in our mind of who our leaders are. And this is not only in South Africa, this is across the continent. So the stereotypes for those who need to govern us are male stereotypes. Leadership seen more in terms of power and who is associated with power, males. Harassment is still there. Discrimination is still there. And more importantly, women still have to take care of both the reproductive and the productive costs in society. And we often forget that those responsibilities remain for women.
Professor, looking ahead, what strategies should you, or rather do you believe should be implemented to ensure that the new administration effectively leverages the benefits of, call it diversity and inclusion, in really driving South Africa's development forward?
I think looking forward to the national dialogue, they have to make sure that the diverse stakeholders are represented at the national dialogue, because it is there where I believe we can more appropriately deal with some of the challenges, collectively identify those challenges and develop strategies then for how we as South Africans, rather than people belonging to political parties, need to deal with our very vexed challenges in the society.
We continue our focus on the critical topics of women and youth representation in South Africa's 7th Democratic Parliament, continuing our discussion with Professor Cheryl Hendricks as she gives us her insights. But when you'd really look at the new National Assembly, it's set to feature a broader spectrum of age groups, including, like what I've said in my intro, the youngest MP in our democratic history. However, female representation has seen a slight decline. And as we look ahead to the potential formation of a government of national unity, we really want to explore the importance of diversity and inclusion in our democratic processes. If you want to share in on the conversation or give us your thoughts, call us on 0861 987 000. WhatsApp line, we are on 0833037093. You can also drop us a voice note there on Twitter or X. We are at PowerFM987. And remember, the show hashtag is PowerTalk. Facebook, drop us a message on PowerFM.
Power Talk on Power 98.7.
Indeed, this is a Power Talk, continuing our conversation right now with Professor Cheryl Hendricks. Prof, glad to have you back once again. So these higher levels of diversity in less developed countries are often linked to inefficient policy decisions and conflict. How can South Africa navigate these challenges in the current political climate, especially when we see so much infighting and different ideologies being presented by some of these political parties who are forced to work together now?
I think it's important to stress it's not just representation, it's also meaningful participation, right? Because the people we want there must be those who have certain values worth holding, I think, the constitutional values, principles, priorities, ethical behavior, that they must be accountable. We don't just want any youth or any woman or any gender non-conforming person as not just any male leader there. We need to begin to place more emphasis not on identity alone, but also on what are the principles, behaviors, practices, policies. Who does this person who and what does this person stand for? And I think we're not asking those enough of those kinds of questions. If we want to see transformation, then we have to put in place leaders, young, middle-aged, old women, men, gender non-conforming, who are ethical, who are transformative, and who are accountable. You know, we have to look at the type of leadership that we are sending to Parliament and to our cabinet as well.
So in your opinion, Prof, what specific policies or initiatives should the new parliament prioritize to really address the needs and aspirations of women and youth or this demographic as we continue with this theme?
So I think we've developed a number of policies already. It's really around implementing those policies. I'm thinking just off the cuff, of the National Strategic Plan on Gender-Based Violence, the National Action Plan on Women, Peace and Security, for example. I know that there are a number of policies for youth as well. Let us start with what we have already and begin to implement that. We don't have to go and reinvent the wheel here.
So with the ongoing discussions, and I mentioned the government of national unity, but do you believe, as we extend this particular point, do you believe that there are mechanisms that can be put in place to really ensure that this unity government remains inclusive and representative? I mean, when looking at our screens right now, it would seem that a number of parties have fielded, call it younger MPs, as they continue taking their oath of office.
Yeah, so it's for us to keep on amplifying the voices, because we have been doing that, and that's why we're seeing a changed makeup going into Parliament, more youth, although decreasing the overall number of women, but political parties are fielding them in there. Amplify, organize, make sure that you are represented. We can't leave this to the volition of political parties, because they are interest-based, they are power-based. And so if we want our interests reflected, we need to organize, mobilize, amplify our voices so that they can be heard there.
But are there examples, or can you share examples of successful diversity and inclusion strategies from other countries that South Africa can adopt to really enhance its democratic processes, but also the country's development?
Look, in fairness to South Africa, we have done pretty well compared to other countries. So we must start there, that we actually have managed this. It's the sliding back, the retrogression of this that we must be careful against, right? This is because we had 50% women in cabinet, 46% women in parliament. So it's not just the representation, it's the backsliding of especially women's representation, and now to increase youth participation. And as we already said, some of the mechanisms there are quota system, for example. I doubt whether political parties will adopt it. Many of the parties are against quota systems. Then in terms of, because we don't just want women represented or youth represented there, we want the representatives who are there to deal with the issues that impact women and that impact the youth and gender non-conforming people as well. And so it's for us then to also indicate what we want them to do. I always said, this is a bit absurd that political parties just come and say, I will do this, I will do that, I will do that in the manifestos, where the people should be actually gathering and saying that anybody who we vote into power there should be doing X, Y, and Z for us. And so we flip that script around, actually, and determine these are the things that we want by a charter or some other document that outlines what women want, what youth want, other groups want in society. And we give that as a mandate and not the other way around.
Professor Hendricks, let me thank you for your time.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.